Do you allow push alerts to your phone, or did you turn them off? A push notification is a message that pops up on your smartphone. They're a bubble of news, just a sentence or two that draws your attention, at least for a moment, away from what you're doing. And some days, those breaking news push alerts, they come flying at us. When do you open up an alert to read the whole story? Or do you feel like the alert sufficiently informs you of the latest news? Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Laura Bennett and Allison Benedict stay with us. Their new piece in Slate is called The Year in Push Alerts, How Breaking News Became Our Lives. Laura, where we left off, you were exploring your life post this package happening, your relationship with push alerts has changed, if at all, after you did a deep dive in this investigation of push alerts. What's changed?
Well, I was saying that I sort of hate myself a microscopic bit every time I swipe through a push alert, because now that I've spent so much time thinking about how our lives are kind of plagued by push alerts, if not push alerts directly, then by, you know, the breaking news climate we all live in. Allison was just listing all the ways in which news kind of overwhelms us, you know, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. But I would add, you know, dinner parties, going to the grocery store. Like, it's just hard to avoid chatter about the news and the sense that it's coming at you from all angles, because we're living in such an outrageous political and news climate. So I would say, you know, I mean, my obviously I work in journalism, so my relationship to breaking news is that I pay attention to it closely and think about how to cover it and how to respond to it and all of that. But after working on this package of stories, I definitely feel more sort of self-aware about the whole enterprise.
And your package in itself, Allison, really sucks you in. Someone reading your work can interact with push alerts on a timeline of events. Viewers can, you can select all push alerts, only Trump, no Trump. Why did you find it important to provide these filters in understanding push alerts?
It was less about understanding push alerts, probably, and more about understanding the year. We wanted to show the year in breaking news in some form, and this was kind of a fun, or some have said traumatizing, way to do it. So we and our wonderful interactive editor, his name is Andrew Kahn, created this thing to play with, this interactive timeline where you can see all of the push alerts from the moment Trump was elected through early November of this year, sort of slide across your screen. You can play with them. You can, you know, pause the thing to actually read everything that happened. You can see how they came, sometimes in bursts with, like, you know, 8 push alerts on a day, and then there's some days when there's nothing. You can click around the timeline, which has some of the major events over the year, not just Trump-related things, but like Bill O'Reilly out at Fox and, unfortunately, shootings and bombings and just a way to review everything that has happened this year, which is really a lot. And then there's also a filter where you can see all of the push alerts related to Trump, or you can see none of the push alerts related to Trump. And that is a very, very quiet timeline, the no Trump push alert timeline.
Yeah, Laura, let's explore that a little bit. Is this the convergence of President Trump and technology, or what's happening? Why? How does Trump factor into all of these push alerts in politics?
That is a very good question, and it's one we've talked about a little bit in sort of editorial meetings. Also, it's what exactly has changed this year, and how much is Trump sort of responsible for the flood of news? Obviously, this is a very kind of capricious and disorganized, one might say, administration. I think they might even sort of embrace that characterization. There's a lot of, chaos coming out of it at all times. And he's also a president who excels particularly at kind of reorienting our attention on a dime. And so with every kind of utterance or tweet or whatever, he is sort of strategically, it seems, redirecting our attention, restarting the news cycle, distracting us. And so that's definitely why, when you look at the all, you know, only Trump or the Trump and other push alerts timeline, it feels like such a cacophony because, you know, especially in certain time periods, there's just so much happening because whenever he tweets something that's vaguely related to policy or just like likely to be incendiary, there's a push alert about it.
But I also think, I mean, I think that is so true. But then in between, there have been all these other news events that honestly, maybe I wouldn't have paid as much attention to before. I mean, the end of the year has been, you know, a ton of these sexual assault allegations. But even before that, like, there were the two hurricanes, and in between the hurricanes, I remember there being a push alert one morning about an earthquake in Mexico. And it just felt like so much at once, like so many natural disasters at once. And in another moment, I actually may not have been paying attention, which doesn't say anything wonderful about me. But because of Trump and because of our like hyper awareness to news now, all of these events were met like with the significance that they carry, or maybe sometimes with more significance than they need be. But everything feels heightened. Everything has felt heightened this year.
Allison, as Slate's executive editor, there's some craft, you would think, to figuring out what gets pushed and what sits idling there on the website or waits for print, if print happens. How are editors discerning what news is pushed?
Well, it really depends on the outlet. I mean, at Slate, we have a different strategy. We're not often breaking news at Slate, so we're not pushing the things that like our writers have, you know, reported and are the first to put on the internet or out into the world. We're pushing the pieces that we're most proud of, the best analysis that we have that day. So it's slightly different than the push alerts we're talking about in this package. But you know, the major news outlets are generally pushing breaking news. Now, the threshold for breaking news varies, and I think at the beginning of the year, you saw push alerts for, like, a lot of things, like Trump tweeted a thing, and that was a push alert, and that, I think, changed over the year as people have, as the push editors and the audience have sort of become maybe more skeptical of those tweets as news or more overwhelmed by push alerts, and they are conscious of alert fatigue or notification fatigue, and so I think are curating maybe more than they were at the beginning of the year.
And Laura, is there a domino effect that happens if one outlet does a push alert on something and then you see another two outlets right there, right after that first push alert coming out with something very similar?
Well, this ties a little bit into what Allison was talking about before, which is that some of the news outlets that are doing a lot of breaking news are neck and neck in competition with each other, especially the New York Times and the Washington Post. So the editors there have described the sensation of sitting there in the room, you know, brainstorming whether they should push an alert about a specific news event, what the alert should say, and then seeing on their phone a push alert from the Washington Post, and they suddenly feel flooded with, you know, anxiety or like the competitive spirit, and they feel like they want to get theirs out immediately. So there's a lot of that going on. It's also, I mean, with us, you know, in the Slate newsroom, again, as Allison said, we are more of we do more sort of analysis and feature writing and less pounding the pavement and breaking news. And so when we get an alert on our phone from, say, the Times or the Post, it can drive the day's news cycle for us in that someone posts it on Slack, which is our in-office chat program, and then we start figuring out what, you know, how we can cover this breaking news development, what further reporting maybe we can do. And so we're all kind of paying attention to these.
Allison, how much has the Russia investigation contributed to the last year of push alerts?
A lot. We have one piece in our package that's by kind of a Russia scholar who looked back at the year in Russia alerts. There are many. Laura, do you know how many? I actually don't know the number, but
you know, I don't remember the exact number despite editing this piece, but I remember that it was a lot, and he looked at them from the Times and the Post and did a kind of close reading reflecting on the shape of the scandal as told through these push alerts. But I remember he felt that it was quite a few, unsurprisingly.
And his feeling after looking at the push alerts was that, and this is not to take away anything from the excellent reporting that was done over the year and that is continuing on this story, but that what he noticed was that so much of it was actually not driven by, I don't know what you would classically call investigative reporting, but so much of it was driven by leaks by administration officials or, whoever Trump would call the deep state, coming forward to these reporters and telling them things to an unusual degree.
And it's one thing to seek out the news. It's another when it's constantly in your face or when your phone lights up. Is this interruption inherently bad, Laura, or inherently good? How should we feel about this day and age?
Well, I think it's hard to classify so neatly along those lines. I would say it is inherently complicated in that and at this particular moment in time, it feels, unless you choose to disengage from the news completely, which is getting harder and harder to do, then it's just kind of, as Allison said in her introductory essay, it can feel like the cadence of life has changed. Like we're just sort of, we're living in new rhythms at this point because there are so much breaking news and it's so hard to sort through what's real and what's fake and what's important and what's not. And one of the takeaways of this Russia piece was that how momentous and how exhilarating, like sort of a spy thriller, every development in the Russia story felt. And now when you look back on some of this, it just, a lot of it fizzled, or a lot of it was felt like a dead end, or a lot of it has sort of not borne fruit yet and we're still waiting on it. And that experience of sort of waiting to see what the thing is and not knowing how to sift through the rubble and differentiate between all these little pellets of news, that's been an essential experience of the year for a lot of people.
I also think, I would say, like, on the whole, I agree that it's very complicated, but on the whole, personally for me, I think it is, although exhausting and maybe has made for a much less pleasant life, it's good. I think that as a person, we talk in this essay about this, you know, being a nonpartisan feeling, but as a person who, myself, I'm generally horrified by this administration, I find myself surprised that still a year later, I am, like, not just in my job, but in my life, so paying such close attention, I'm so impacted, I'm so, like, sort of, I guess, anxious all the time, alert, and I'm surprised that feeling hasn't gone away a bit, and I think it's probably good that it hasn't.
Their new piece is called The Year in Push Alerts, How Breaking News Became Our Lives. Laura Bennett is features director for Slate. Allison Benedict is Slate's executive editor. Earlier in the hour, we talked to Joe Smith, who chairs the political science department at University of Alabama. This hour was produced by Kili Baltina and Nyasia Ellison. Dean Knetter is technical director. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.